operators and getting educated by them on what they should be looking for. And even then, it's important to take a real audit of what is the money that you're putting into your 401k.
Do you love your job, but want other investment options than your company's 401k and trying to pick stocks? If so, you've come to the right place. In this podcast, you will get actionable information for your passive real estate investment journey. Welcome back to another episode of Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. Here's your host, Justin Dixon.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. I'm your host, Justin Dixon, and I'm super excited to have Keely Hubbard on the podcast today. She worked in the corporate world as VP of sales, running large sales teams, but really wanted to leave and start her own business development strategy and coaching firm. Did that, and then her dad reached out and said, hey, I really want to start investing in real estate. So they started a real estate investing company, bought a 7-unit complex in Chicago, and realized that it didn't scale as fast as they wanted. The returns weren't as great for their investors, so they moved into large multifamily syndication deals. And then we dive into a little bit deeper into her work in buying land up in north part of Texas to grow wine grapes. She's got some vineyards up there that we dig into pretty deeply. So great episode. Really excited to have Keely on. So let's welcome her to the show. All right, Keely. Awesome. Thank you for being on the pod. Really happy to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Justin. I've been looking forward to this.
Awesome. Well, let's kind of jump right in. Kind of give us a little bit of an overview of who you are, what you're up to, and talk about some of maybe your real estate journey.
Yeah. So I'm from the corporate space. I always say I escaped corporate back in 2017, but I built a pretty big career there in the sales world. It was in financial education, but I was VP of sales, running about teams of 600 salespeople, lots of directors, too many meetings with the C-suite, and traveling 23 days a month. And I just was completely burnt out. So I left to start my own business consulting and sales coaching firm. And at the time, my dad, who's been in the financial markets for many years, since the 90s, trading Forex futures, options, stocks, all the things, was transitioning out of the financial markets. At that time, interest rates were compressing around the world. And for him to make the money that he was making for his clients at the time was very challenging as interest rates go down. He was trading currencies worldwide. So he's like, we're getting into hard assets. Do you want to go into business with me? I want to start buying apartment complexes. And if you've ever met my dad, my answer was, yeah, of course. Yeah. It's so much fun to do business with him. So I had the time at that point because I left corporate. And so we started down the path of multifamily. We didn't start out with apartment complexes. We started out with a 7-unit brownstone in Chicago and very quickly realized this is not going to work long term. It's hard to scale. There's not enough meat on the bone for all of our investors to participate. So we found syndication after that and a similar path to a lot of other syndicators and operators and buying large apartment complexes. And most recently, we've really gotten into land, agriculture specifically, and even more specific, building vineyards here in Texas from the ground up. So you can syndicate anything and investors love these specialized investments that are giving better returns than Wall Street. So that's what we're doing now. And it's awesome. Been a lot of fun.
I appreciate that overview. And I want to kind of unpack a couple of those things. Because I know Keely and I know her dad from the investment group that I'm in, but there are things that I'm learning every time I meet people on the pod. So I kind of want to go back to when you were a W-2, you were leading large sales teams. Had you kind of had the idea of doing real estate at all at that point? Or was your kind of path to leaving the corporate world more like, I want to start a coaching business, consulting business?
Here's the thing, and I know a lot of W-2 employees feel this, especially high performance, high income earners. I didn't even have investing on my radar. Why? Because I didn't have time to think about it. It was just high stress, travel all the time. It was very hard to turn off work. I had a lot of people that reported into me. So investing wasn't even on my radar. What was on my radar was I have to get out of this rat race. And the fastest way for me to do that was to do what I do best, which is sales coaching, but do it for myself. And so thank God for my dad, because he's the one that pulled me into this space. And maybe I would have found it eventually. I definitely would have started thinking about my money more at that time, but it's the golden handcuff story. Wasn't even on my radar because I didn't have time to think about it.
Yeah, no, it's so interesting. A lot of the investors that I talk with are in that position where they maybe have heard about real estate investing and they think about it from like, oh, I need to go buy another single family house and rent that out, right? Or it's like fix and flip, all the other things that you have to be very active kind of involved in. And I was in that position when I was a W-2. You just don't know what you don't know. And then once you start to get into this world, there's so many options to kind of get down the road. So right now, what's your current kind of mix as far as like areas of focus that you've got your coaching business and then real estate. So how do you kind of bide your time and what's your kind of outlook as far as kind of what you're doing?
You know, it's interesting. You leave the corporate space of working 60 to 70 hours per week. And I feel like I do even more than that now, if that's possible, but I'm having so much more fun because I'm doing it for myself. In the real estate space, my dad's the one in charge of acquisitions, underwriting, asset management. I really handle the investor relations side of things and getting our message out there and what we're doing and how we can help people. So it's pretty easy to manage both businesses. And I just love people. So the ability to get to meet brand new investors that find us online or hear us through a podcast like this and reach out, it's a lot of fun for me. So it's a lot of work. It's a lot of hard work, but I enjoy it.
Yeah. And I guess as you and your dad kind of sounds like you guys have found what you're best at and your dad's maybe best at the acquisitions and kind of finding the deals. Maybe talk us through some of the initial, you said you had that 7-unit brownstone in Chicago. And quickly realize, hey, this is maybe not the right kind of size that I need to be going after, especially to kind of get your investors back the returns that you want. How did you kind of make that shift from kind of the 7-unit to 100 plus?
Yeah. You know, my dad, one thing that I'll credit him, I mean, many things I could credit him with, but he's always thinking about scale. He's a serial entrepreneur. He's owned 6 companies in his life. And then once he got rid of the companies that he owned for a long time, metal manufacturing, warehousing, he's done commercial leasebacks, done a lot of different industries and owned companies. And once he got rid of those, he got into, okay, how do I just invest for myself? There's no employees, there's less headaches. And so that's how we got initially into the financial markets and then now real estate. But I think for him, looking at scaling, we're going to have a headache because the property is a headache. I both know that.
Yep.
It's just a matter of managing it. If you're going to have a headache, you might as well have a migraine, as we say. Like, I'd rather have a big headache if I'm going to have to deal with it. I don't want a little 7-unit property in Chicago and I live in Dallas and now you've got all this travel in between and it's just not worth it. There's got to be more income. There's got to be more meat on the bone. So that's when my dad literally just started searching, how do I buy large apartment complexes? And we found syndication through that.
Awesome. So I want to kind of dig into that a little bit more, kind of just learning more about how you kind of started the process of syndication. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick sponsor break. We'll be right back.
Whether you're in a job you love or hate, building a financial foundation is important. This foundation can support you by providing passive income, stability in an uncertain economy, or the launching pad for you to start your own business. Great Venture Capital helps busy professionals invest in commercial real estate to build passive income streams, grow wealth, and take advantage of tax benefits. If you'd like to learn more, check us out at greatventurecapital.com or send an email to justin@greatventurecapital.com.
All right, we are back with the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. We've got Keely on the podcast today. And so we were talking about kind of her transition from the 7-unit apartment complexes, which while they're great, you want to scale and go bigger, you kind of got to get into the 100, 200 unit apartment complex process. And that's kind of my journey. I started with 2 units, a duplex. And then I was like, well, this is great, but I'm not financially independent. So I can't just keep pumping money into this, putting 25% down every time. And then I found syndication, but I realized, okay, well, I also don't have the capital to go buy a 100-unit apartment complex myself. And also the underwriting is more difficult. How you get the debt on these things, like you can't do it just yourself unless you have a long track record. So how did you and your dad kind of transition from that 7-unit? And then obviously it sounds like you both have that growth mindset, but how did you get into it? How did you get that first one?
Yeah, mentors, big believers in mentors. My dad has had many mentors in his life. I've had many business coaches, sales coaches, executive coaches when I was in the corporate space and still have 2 coaches today on my payroll, if you will. But mentorship, my dad's a big believer in, he's done it the hard way where he's tried to figure it out himself and he's realized it costs you a lot more in the long run versus finding somebody that's done it and is willing to mentor you and you got to pay to play. So that's how we got into the space, was finding very experienced operators that had multi-million, some of them billion-dollar portfolios, had done the work and were willing to take us under their wing and show us how to do it.
Got it. And then I want to shift gears a little bit to kind of where you're focused in the real estate space. And that's kind of like investor relations, talking to investors, raising capital. So maybe I know you are a consultant, so you don't need to give us away your secret sauce, but I'm kind of just curious, kind of some tips around how you go and find investors and then how you talk to somebody that is maybe where you were in, I make a lot of money. I'm super busy. I have no time to really get enough knowledge to learn about this investing, this real estate investing space. How do you kind of talk to those people about going from that, I don't have the time, I don't have the brain space to do this, to, okay, I'm going to actually take a little bit of time and invest? Because even if you're passive, there's still a little bit of time investment to get the knowledge and make sure you feel comfortable giving $50,000, $100,000 plus to each investment.
Yeah, I wish I knew about this as a passive investor when I was in corporate, because I made incredible money. It was a very lucrative role, but I wasn't investing it wisely because we just kind of go down the path that we've been programmed to do and just kind of follow the herd. And so looking back, I would have made a lot more progress financially had I known about how to passively invest in real estate. But in terms of finding investors, I always believe that it's got to be a part of your lifestyle. Like when you're raising capital, it's not, oh, I raise capital on, you know, Thursday from 1 to 3 and on Monday from 5 to 8. It's like we have to do it every single day. We eat, sleep, and breathe our business. And so people that we're meeting just every day, we're always looking for who can we help. And obviously not everybody that you talk to is going to be that person. But if you're putting yourself in those environments where people that are high income professionals, like I was, have that capital, then those conversations become a lot easier and then it's a lot easier for them to relate to it. And it's just sharing your pain points in your own story. Like, you know, I know what that feels like. A lot of the people that I work with now, the reason they reach out is they've built a really big career. They love what they do and they don't have time to invest. And they know they've got to do something different than the standard 401k and mutual funds and stock investments if they really want to make sure that the money they've worked so hard for is going to work for them long term. They don't know where to start. They don't have time to fix and flip. And that's why they reach out. They want to get into passive investing. And then I explain it from there. But it's always telling them stories about other people who are just like them, why they reach out and ask for help. And obviously I have my own story as well.
Yeah. How are your conversations changing now in the kind of, we're recording this in kind of mid late February of 23, high interest rates, investors that I've talked to, some of them are kind of see this as an opportunity. If you can get a deal, if you can get a deal that works now, odds are interest rates are going to go down at some point over the next, you know, during that 5-year hold period. What are the conversations you're having now? How are they different than maybe 12 months ago?
I think it's helping investors understand how we adjust not only our underwriting for new acquisitions, but our operations strategy for existing properties that we own in environments like this, and being really upfront with them. And so they understand the success of any deal has to do with the operator. Who's the asset manager? That is the key player in any deal. And here's how we're looking at the market right now. Here's how we're adjusting operations for our existing deals. And here's what we're looking at going forward for future acquisitions and future opportunities for investors. And I think if you're lead with that and you're opening them up front, they're looking to you to tell them how should they feel about the current economy. But we also have to look at what is Yahoo Finance saying? What is CNBC saying? What are the things they're being inundated with, and help them see through all the mud, right? And get the clarity of what's the truth about what's really going on. And there is a great opportunity. Now is a great time to be liquid and have money ready to deploy if you're a passive investor. There's going to be some really great opportunities coming, we think, very soon.
Yeah. Is your dad still kind of actively underwriting deals and looking for stuff, or is he kind of on the back burner right now, kind of just waiting for opportunities to kind of come around?
We're on the back burner in terms of multifamily. I mean, it's mostly because of this agriculture project. We've got a lot of infrastructure that needs to be built. So that's really what we're focused on, pushing a lot of wine grapes into the Texas grape supply chain and making sure that we're planning ahead for years to come.
I wanted to transition to that because I'm very curious kind of how things are going. So maybe explain what you're doing. It sounds like you're acquiring land and then making wine. So making the grapes.
We're making the grapes. I would say vineyard is like a nice marketing term for grape farmers. That's really what we are, grape farmers. But Texas is actually a really big wine industry. Most people don't realize that. It's a little over a $13 billion economic impact here. People don't know that because most of our wine is consumed here in state. And the reason for that is we don't have enough wine grapes. So currently right now, the wine demand is outpacing our grape supply by about double. We need about 28,000 tons of wine grapes to meet current demand. We're only making about 14,000. And that number, the gap continues to widen because a lot of our farmers here, they're grape farmers, they're just old school, right? They're generational farmers. They've been doing this for a long time. And nobody in Texas is operating with machines. Vineyards are not mechanized here. It's hand labor, hand harvesting, hand pruning. And what we've done is we've taken technology, right? What California does, and we've brought that here to Texas, where we can run a 350-acre vineyard with 3 people and big heavy tech machinery, where any other vineyard in Texas would have to have 100 people in the vineyard harvesting. And we can do it quite a bit faster as well. And so a lot of farmers here are not transitioning to that because it takes a lot of money to do it. Yeah. These are big projects, but you get economies of scale. So that's our goal, is to come in here and fill that supply gap. And we'll be the biggest vineyard operator in the state of Texas in 2024. We're really excited about it. It's been a huge blessing and a lot of fun. And investors have had a lot of fun too.
Where are these plots of land and these vineyards? Because obviously it's just a field with vineyards, right? It's not like you've got a tasting room and you're not making the wine. It's just a farm kind of thing.
Right. It's just a farm. It's pretty ugly. I mean, I think the vineyards are beautiful, but the location is not a destination location. So it's what's called the High Plains AVA. AVA stands for American Viticultural Area. It's a designated ag area in the United States, but it's right outside of Lubbock. So it's about 45 minutes outside of Lubbock, Texas, which is kind of Northwest Texas.
Yeah.
Heard of Texas Tech. So that's where Lubbock's at. So it's right outside of there. It's just prime grape growing conditions. It's really hot, dry heat. And then we've got cool winters. It's very similar to the kind of Central California. Most people, when they think of Texas and wineries, they think of the Hill Country, Fredericksburg, right in Austin. Well, about 80% of the grapes that make the wine in Austin come from the High Plains AVA. It's just a lot prettier in the Hill Country to visit the wineries. So that's
yeah, I can attest to the prettiness of the Fredericksburg wineries. I cannot attest to Lubbock and how delightful that place is where the vineyards are. But so that's interesting.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
I was going to say, I'm curious kind of, have you been able to transition a lot of your investors that you were looking at for, or that were investing in multifamily and transition them to the vineyard? And then maybe talk about the similarities or differences in kind of the return profiles of both.
Yeah, quite a bit, actually. We've had a lot of investors that have really enjoyed the diversification in their portfolio. One of the reasons for that is we might do these multifamily deals and we've got a 6-year business plan, but we're able to execute it in 2 years and sell the property. And so now investors are flush with cash and they've got to redeploy that somewhere. So this is definitely a long-term play. It's passive income for 25 to 30 years. These are not annual crops. You plant these vineyards once and they will run for 25 years. And we've got replant contingency funds and plans for the future. But as far as returns go, I'd say they're similar. They're just as lucrative, if not more, from a cash flow perspective. Wine grapes are the most profitable crop that there is. So you're looking at about a 215 to 275% return over 10 years, and then a 16% cash flow from years 10 through the life of the vineyard, 25, 30 as we replant. So it's got a great legacy piece of it, which I really think in hearing from investors is why they like it. A lot of them are thinking about their kids and their grandkids and just cash flow for the long term.
Yeah. And I don't mean to get too deep in the weeds on this, but is it kind of like a development project where the first few years, because you plant grapes, they don't produce wine that year, right? It's like a 3-leaf, they call it, I think, or something like that,
yes.
Where you have to like plant it for like 3 years and then they actually convert, you can use them to produce wine. So you have to outlay a lot of cash in those first handful of years to reap and re-sow kind of a thing until they actually start generating some income.
Yeah, correct. It's a lot of operational costs up front. They will actually, like you're saying, produce fruit in the third leaf, but it's not fruit that we want to sell. We really hold the vines back. When vines go in the ground, they want to come out full force and produce as much tonnage as possible. But our goal in the first 4 years is to produce a really strong wood stock and root system because we want them to run for 25 years. So we really hold them back. We push them full production in year 5. So that's where returns kick in above 30% in year 5. And we're producing about 12 tons per acre on these vines.
Very, very interesting. Sorry to go down in a deep rabbit hole on that, but that's just super fascinating. I don't think I've heard about a lot of syndications. And like I said earlier, once you start peeling back the onion in the real estate investing world, you kind of see people doing a lot of crazy and interesting things. And I've never heard of anybody doing wine vineyard syndications. So definitely unique in that respect for sure.
I had an investor say, he's like, multifamily stuff is like the gateway drug into these investments. He's like, whole world's opened up. Oh, he's doing RVs and self-storage and ATM funds and all the things that are out there.
So. Yeah, I had a guy on the other day that was syndicating RV resorts. So not like campgrounds, like these places where have like pools and like all this stuff. It's very, very fascinating. Cool. So I want to kind of transition a little bit back into kind of the W-2 mindset. And so go back to when you were VP of sales and you were leading large teams. What do you think is a good first step if somebody wants to start their real estate investing journey? And obviously, if they're listening to this podcast, that's a great first step getting some education. But one of the things that's important that I talk about to my investors is you got to know who the operator is, or you got to at least know, like, and trust the person that's bringing you a deal. So how do you start to think about that first step and maybe starting to vet kind of the people that are bringing you opportunities to make sure that you're making the best decision that you can as a passive investor?
Yeah, I love that. I mean, like you said, the first step in my mind is connecting with really good operators and getting educated by them on what they should be looking for. And even then, I think it's important to take a real audit of what is the money that you're putting into your 401k? Because we've been trained and lied to, if we're just being honest, by Wall Street, that there's this free match and I don't want to miss out on the free money in the 401k. And I'll tell you a quick story about a man that I worked with. This is back in 2011. And it was back when I was in financial education, and he was trying to figure out why his 401k wasn't growing. And I looked at the statements and understand what's going on. And he had lost quite a bit of money in 2008. So he put everything into bonds. And what most people don't realize is the fees of a 401k plan eat away at the return so deeply that his accounts were not growing hardly at all. So 3.5% fees doesn't seem like a whole lot when you first start your portfolio. So let's say he's an anesthesiologist, by the way. Okay. So early on in his career, he's got $100,000 in his account. $3,500 is not that much because he's contributing 12 grand a year and the company's matching it.
Yeah.
So he's adding 24 grand. He's only paying 3,500 in fees. Well, all of a sudden now when I met with him, his account's well over 1.1 million and those fees are above 35,000 a year.
Right.
So when you have a $35,000 per year break-even point, you're only putting in 24.
Like, yeah, you've got limits, right? You can't put in endless amounts of money.
It's the Wall Street game. So I think that you will feel like you can sleep a lot better at night if you start to take more control over where is your money currently going. And those funds can be redirected towards investments like what you do, Justin, as an operator, and they can invest passively and really start to see their money work for them instead of staying stuck in the Wall Street system.
That's a great story. I never even really thought about that. Yeah, your fees, once you get to a certain point, can outpace the returns, or at least outpace what you're putting in. And if it's a flat year, then you've lost money because you paid more than you've actually input. So that's really
fascinating. That's the crazy thing. Like Wall Street, you pay Wall Street for the privilege of losing your money. If that doesn't really make you mad, like then we can't help you, right? If you can't get upset about the fact that you have to pay Wall Street and they lose 30, 40% of your money, or like last year, at least 19%. I mean, that's frustrating. You've got to start doing something different. I always talk about moving money out of Wall Street and moving into Main Street with people that are just like you, Justin, that have lived their life, know what they're going through, and are really helping people make an impact on their future.
Yeah. And it's just, you see the stock market, I think it was up or down, like it was down like 500 or 600 points today. And the nice thing about real estate is you can go touch it. You can go look at it. You can call whoever, if you know the operator, you call them, say, hey, what's going on with the deal? You get monthly statements of what's going on, good, bad, or indifferent. And, you know, the swings aren't nearly as bad as, you know, 600 point swings on a daily basis. So it's more of a long game. It's not as sexy maybe as the stock market seems to be, but it's still fun in my mind.
Yes.
So.
I agree.
Awesome. I want to kind of transition to our kind of final phase here. I've got a 3-pack of questions that I ask everybody that comes on the podcast. So I guess what's one piece of advice that got you started or helped you along your real estate investing journey?
So lean on others. Not try to think that you have to know everything. This is such, you and I both know this is a team sport on the active investor side as an operator, but I also believe that it's a team sport as a passive. And for you to really get comfortable deploying money into these investments, you've got to find somebody that you trust and just get educated and lean on other people that have been there before and have done this to get you to a place where your money's actually working for you.
Yeah, I learned pretty quickly once I started getting into the syndication world, started underwriting deals by myself. And I was like, well, this is great. What happens if I find a deal that actually works? I don't have the capacity or ability to take it down. It is 100% a team sport. And we met through the same kind of mentorship coaching program. And I definitely believe in the mentorship process, especially in this space for sure. So, all right. Question two, what is your favorite real estate or business book that you're into right now?
That's such a good question. I don't know if I would call this a business book or even a real estate book. I read a lot of books on mindset. And one of them that's big for me is just understanding money. Because obviously money is so much involved in this, but money mindsets. There's a really good book called The Soul of Money by Lynn Twist. And a lot of times we don't realize the mindsets and the frameworks that we have from our childhood, what our beliefs are about money. And oftentimes that's what holds us back from being successful. So as a business owner, that's important for me that I master that money side of things. And especially as an investor, that I show up today as the woman that I see myself being 5 years from now. How would she think about money? What would she do? And so it's a really good book to help you kind of break down those constructs of money and reframe things.
Yeah, no, that's super interesting. My dad was a budgeter and a saver, and I took some positives from that because I'm a budgeter, but I also am a saver. And I look at my bank account sometimes and I'm like, oh crap, I need to take that money and actually deploy it because it's not doing anything for me right now.
Right.
Just sitting in a savings account, you know, earning 0.1% or even 2% if you get a high yield account. But so there's good and bad. And you got to just kind of pick your head up sometimes, be like, oh crap, okay, I'm falling back into my old ways of thinking and I need to, you know, and that's the beauty of listening to podcasts or reading books is like you take something new from everything and you kind of can just kind of reset when it comes to that point. So
love that.
All right, if you hit your financial freedom number, meaning you could live an amazing life living off of just passive income, what would you do?
I would do sales coaching for free. I would travel around the world and I would teach sales because it is like my passion and I love helping business owners. And so that's something that I have on my dream board and my goals list. And I don't think I could ever not teach sales because I just really enjoy it that much.
Awesome. I really appreciate you being on the podcast, Keely. How can people get in touch with you if they want to reach out and learn about the vineyards or the multifamily stuff you're doing, or maybe they're in sales and they want to get some sales coaching?
Yeah, I mean, any social media platform, you can probably find me on it. If you're interested in the vineyards, just hubbardcapitalgroup.com, and the coaching stuff's on keelyhubbard.com. But I would say find me on social and you'll probably get a voice text from me if you send me a message. So you'll probably hear my voice when I message back, but I'd love to connect.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, Keely, awesome. Thanks for being on the podcast. I hope everyone took something away from this episode. I've got another one dropping soon, so keep listening. Awesome. Keely, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Justin.
I hope you got value out of this episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast, your one-stop shop for education on how you can continue to work hard in your career and have different options to invest even harder. If you took anything away from this episode, please like and comment. I read every comment as it helps me serve you better. Make sure to subscribe and hit the notification bell. That way you won't miss out on more valuable content. If you're watching this video, it means that you want to grow your passive real estate portfolio. The easiest way to do that is to join our investor club by heading to greatventurecapital.com/invest. The link is in the show notes. See you on the next episode.